Good morning, members. I'd like to call this meeting of the State Government Finance and Elections Committee to order. The meeting for February 26th. And pursuant to rule, House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. The Committee Legislative Assistant will take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
I'm here.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Present.
Representative Bonner?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Elkins?
Present.
Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Cleavorn?
Present.
Representative Kosnick?
Present.
Representative Mason? Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, present.
Representative Quam?
Present.
And Representative Nash, Representative New Brindley are both excused. Looks like Representative Mason just joined. A quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Spreck. First thing on the agenda is approval of the minutes. Representative Claiborne, did you get a chance to look at the minutes from February 25th?
Okay. I am going into committee right now.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move that we adopt the minutes for February 25th as written.
Representative Claiborne moves the minutes from February, approval of the minutes from February 25th. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Ayes have it. I don't see Representative Hansen on the call yet. Oh, there he is, Representative Hansen. He's connecting. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hansen. The first bill on our agenda today is House File 994, and I will move House File 994 be referred to the General Register. Representative Hansen, if you want to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and thank you for the patience at the beginning here. I had to start my committee and log in there. This is, in the past, the legislature has considered some technical changes relating to the legislative auditors and the Legislative Audit Commission. The legislative auditor does great work, but works with the Legislative Audit Commission, which is one of the most bipartisan groups in the state, in state government. It has an equal number of House members, an equal number as it, Senate members, Republicans, and Democrats. So throughout the past 2 years, we have been meeting, and you see us when we ask for program evaluation ideas. You see us when there are financial audits, and you see us when there are special reviews that are done. The most recent one of those was on Water Gremlin a couple weeks ago. And so the legislative auditor is in the legislative branch. He works for all of us and the people of Minnesota. And we have a number in House File 994, a number of changes, some technical, some substantive, but each one of these sections in the bill, the Audit Commission voted on and passed it at our December meeting. So I bring you those consensus agreements that are here before you to update the statute and to make some changes. And I do have Mr. Nobles with me to describe each of the sections.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Nobles. If you want to identify yourself for the record, and then you can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Again, just a voice check. Can you hear me?
We can hear you fine.
Good. My name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. I want to start by thanking Representative Hansen, as he indicated, Chair of the Legislative Audit Commission and member of the commission for many, many years. And we really appreciate his work on the commission and his sponsoring this bill and securing this hearing this morning. Mr. Chairman, I just want to start by saying that the law under which we operate at the Office of Legislative Auditor is extremely important to us. In fact, those of you who have seen me in committees and various places know that I carry a copy of our law with me everywhere I go, because it defines what the authority, jurisdiction is of the legislative auditor. It defines who we audit. It defines the responsibilities that people have to cooperate. It really is the Bible that we work by, Minnesota statutes. And again, as Representative Hansen indicated, our statutes are in Chapter 3 with the rest of the laws relating to the legislature. I know you have a full agenda, Mr. Chairman, so let me just walk through the bill very quickly. Section 1 contains a provision that simply changes the name of several of our support staff. When the law was originally created, these people were called confidential secretaries. I think that implies something much more narrow than they actually do in terms of the breadth of their responsibilities. So we're changing the name to administrative support specialist. We also, in Section 1, would eliminate a mandate that the legislative auditor appoint a fiscal oversight officer for the work we do on Metro Transit. It really isn't necessary to have that, so we ask that you eliminate it. Also, in Section 1 is a provision that would prohibit OLA employees from running for public office. I know that is going to be probably controversial because I see that there has been an amendment posted to eliminate that. So I will come back to that. Let me just get through the other sections, which I think are quite technical. Section 2 simply inserts in law what has been reality for decades, and that is the legislative auditor conducts special reviews. Special reviews are those things that we address that we didn't expect to. We have a regular schedule of financial audits and evaluations, but things do occur. Legislators come to us, citizens come to us, issues appear in the media that we think have to have an outside, independent, nonpartisan investigation. We've had authority in our financial audit section to conduct investigations, but because these special reviews, as we now call them, have become so prominent, we think it ought to be more explicitly recognized in the law. And as Chairman Hansen indicated, our most recent special review looked at the performance of the Pollution Control Agency relative to the company Water Gremlin. Section 3 eliminates some old and unnecessary language that was inserted in the law when OLA was created in 1973. Section 4 tightens up language related to OLA audits at the Department of Human Services. Section 5 clarifies language related to agency responsibility to cooperate with the legislative auditor and provide us with all data that we need for our work. Section 6 strengthens the legislative auditor's ability to protect the identity of individuals who bring forth to our office allegations of misconduct or various other issues related to government. Section 7 repeals several sections of law that we think are no longer necessary. They mandate some audits that, frankly, we can conduct, have authority to conduct without those mandates. So, Mr. Chairman, that is the bill. And I do know there is an amendment, and so we will probably want to go back and talk about the section that relates to that amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. I have a couple questioners. Representative Kosnick, why don't you go ahead with your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Nobles, thank you for being here with us. I always appreciate the professionalism and dedication of you and your office and your staff. Could you clarify a little bit more what you'd mentioned about the section on the Metro Transit?
Yes.
Mr. Nobles.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick. Yes, back some years ago, there was a provision in law that required us to do examinations, financial audits of Metro Transit. And along with that law came this provision that said to do that work, the legislative auditor had to appoint a oversight officer. That sort of mandate for the internal operation of OLA is not needed. Actually, I appointed myself as that officer because I'm in charge of the work that is done here. And I do have two deputies that are help me with that and a staff. But the big thing is that that law, the underlying law that mandated us to do the work at the Metropolitan Transit Authority really was repealed. And so we will continue to do work and audits at the Metropolitan Transit Authority, the Metropolitan Council, various other metropolitan agencies. We have that jurisdiction without the mandate that was there. And so again, this is really a technical change that we just don't think is any longer needed.
Representative Kosnick, follow-up?
I appreciate the clarification. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, I just have a quick question for you, please, about the, I'd like to know, with the bill as it's currently written, if an employee wanted to run for the school board, could you please explain to me how that might work?
Mr. Nobles.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, let me just clarify. Do you want me to answer in the context of what current law is or what would occur as, if this
as the bill is currently written, as the bill before us is written?
If this bill were to pass into law as written, and someone on my staff said, I want to run for a school board position, I would have no authority to keep them from doing that. And so they would be able to require me to give them a leave of absence to do that. Or they could say, no, I don't want to be put on a leave of absence. I'll run by taking leave time, vacation time, and work on weekends, nights to run for that office. So I could not stop them from doing that. What would occur, though, is that if they were to run for that position, I would need to not assign them to anything related to education. We have very, very strict requirements for independence. And so whenever anybody has any kind of an affiliation with an organization, an issue, they cannot work on an audit that relates to that issue or organization. Everybody in our office for every assignment has to fill out a very extensive independence questionnaire that makes many declarations as to their affiliations and other things. Also their financial interests. I fill that out myself. And so I would expect if a person had run for a school board seat, they would indicate that. And frankly, whether they got elected to that seat or not, I would think for a period of time at least, I would have to exclude them from any audit or evaluation work or investigative work related to anything related to education.
Representative Claiborne, follow-up.
Thank you. Mr. Nobles, I believe what you've just described is what the current law is, that maybe is not what the language of the bill before us is, unless I'm
wrong. I'm sorry.
Mr. Nobles.
If the bill, again, I apologize. If a person came to me and said they want to run for the school board, and the law as I would like it to be, were enacted, I would suggest to them that they cannot continue to work at the Office of Legislative Auditor and run for that public office. So that's what the change in the law would implement.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you. I apologize because the original answer didn't address my question. So this is now the follow-up to the question that I asked. So would this in fact limit the individual's franchise from participating in public office if the bill that you're referencing were to go forward?
Mr. Nobles.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, it would. It would say that if you are an employee at the Office of the Legislative Auditor, your terms of employment here would preclude you from running for a public office.
Thank you. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess I also have sort of a couple of questions, one in a similar vein and two others. Is there a way to ensure that someone who is sitting on the board is not holding a partisan office while sitting on the board?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nobles. Mr. Chair, representatives, this gets to be kind of a gray area, frankly, because you members of the legislature probably know far better than I. Many of you may have been on school boards, county commissions. There are public positions, public offices in Minnesota that do not involve running explicitly as a Democrat or Republican. But as a member of a city council, a school board, a county commission, you may be confronted with issues to vote on that certainly are considered partisan. And in fact, my observation is that sometimes people actually run for those offices, those positions, by seeking certain endorsements that seem to imply a partisan identity. So that's my concern. My concern is really the partisanship. And I know that there are people who feel that there are some public offices, like a watershed district position, that are so nonpartisan that there wouldn't be a problem relative to independence at OLA. I acknowledge that, and you actually had an amendment before you earlier, which I understand was withdrawn, that would have limited the restriction for OLA employees to just partisan offices. That would require some interpretation of what that is, but I think that could be accomplished. But frankly, that amendment was withdrawn. So what you have before you now, if I could go ahead and speak to the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Mr. Representative, Mr. Knuckles.
Mr. Chair, do you want me to offer the amendment at this time?
No, Mr. Representative Carlson, we'll get to the testimony here, and then we'll take the votes.
Very good. Knuckles.
So again, if we had simply had an opportunity to insert the word partisan, I think that would be more amenable. But the idea that a person at OLA can run for any other public office, including partisan offices, is, I think, inappropriate to somebody working at OLA. To the best of my knowledge, no other nonpartisan office in the legislature would allow one of their employees to do that. In fact, I read to you a statute that you, the legislature, enacted, which says that the revisor, employees of the revisor's office, and persons assisting the office as part-time employees or independent contractors are subject to the following prohibitions and limitations. This is for the revisor's office. One of those prohibitions is they may not engage in activity of a partisan nature. That's what you've done in law for the revisor of statute. And I assume you did that for good reason, because you do not want to sit down at the table with a person at the revisor's office and talk to them about drafting a bill for you if that person has run and you know that they ran as a Democrat or Republican. Mr. Chairman, if I could just extend my remarks for just a second.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bonner, let him finish his train of thought and then go back to you. Mr. Nobles.
I've worked for the legislature for almost 50 years as a nonpartisan staff person. And what I've learned over the years is that in this environment of the legislature, labels matter. People assess how they are going to trust others by labels often. And there are three labels in the legislative branch that are very important: Democrat, Republican, and nonpartisan. I have lived my career in the legislature to uphold the expectations that I think you have of a nonpartisan person working for you. That is the way I've tried to maintain your trust in me. I'm asking you to allow me, as the head of the Office of the Legislative Auditor, to impose that same expectation on the people who work at that office, that they will not create any label that you would put on them other than nonpartisan, so that when they sit before you and present an audit or an evaluation, you are thinking of them as a nonpartisan person. If they have run for a partisan office, I think you would probably all agree that that would be in your mind as to how that might have influenced that person's work on that audit or evaluation, particularly if you don't agree with what they found. So that's why I come to you. I ask you simply to put OLA on the same field as all the other nonpartisan offices, that have us be under the same standard that Mr. Gehring is or Ms. Roberts is. Don't impose on this office, don't tie the hands of the legislative auditor so that I have to allow a person who is on the payroll of the Office of the Legislative Auditor to run for a partisan office.
Representative Bonner, your follow-up.
Thank you. And I guess I'm going to apologize to Mr. Nobles that my question was probably not clear. So I'm going to apologize to you first. I think my question was more aimed specifically at, so I think your answer really spoke to partisan offices where you may have gone through an actual state-run election, where you have a ballot, you go through that party process. I actually was referring or asking about someone who might be elected to an office that does not go through a statewide election, but may be elevated to a position on the legislative auditor's board. For example, a high-ranking office within a political party or political PAC or organization of that kind, where you may be elected to that post, but it does not go through an actual election, but it could be considered highly partisan. And I'm trying to understand if the bill as it's written would have any provisions, or if there is existing provisions within the board that would prevent someone from holding that position and a position on the board.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nobles, and I believe the board is consisted of elected officials, if I'm not right. You're talking about employees that work for. This would restrict the employees that wouldn't deal with the people on the board. Mr. Nobles.
Mr. Chair and members, I think your question is very good, and it illustrates how much I have had to struggle with how far to take the language in this bill. I didn't take it as far as the law you've enacted for the reviser, which says an employee working at the reviser's office cannot engage in any political activity, which would include, I think, something that you are referencing, Representative Bonner, that is being being in a position in a political party, for example, where you're not on a ballot. And there may be many of those that, frankly, would be, I believe, inappropriate for a person who wants to appear to be and be in fact nonpartisan. If you are the treasurer of the Republican Party, chairman of the Democratic Party, it's hard for me to see how you maintain the perception working at OLA that you are nonpartisan. But I did not take it that far. What I would prefer is the language you adopted for the reviser. But, you know, we're trying to incrementally deal with this issue because this became a reality for me last year. I had an employee who came to me and said, I'm going to run for a seat in the Minnesota Senate. I'm going to run against an incumbent senator. And I said, that's inappropriate for you to maintain your employment here. And he said, well, the law says either you have to give me a leave of absence to do that, but the law also says you cannot require me to take a leave of absence to do that. My hands were completely tied. I had lost control of the ability to protect the reputation of this office as nonpartisan. Potentially, I was going to get a call from a sitting senator saying, Jim, what the heck? You got an employee on your payroll who's running against me? Or he could have decided to run against you or the chair. And I couldn't have done anything. Now, I sat down with him and we had a long conversation. And I explained to him the harm this would do. And he agreed to resign. But he didn't have to. So we were able to get out of that very difficult situation because he was a person of integrity and saw that what he was proposing to do as a citizen and run for office, which he has every right to do, was going to damage this office. And so he resigned. The next person who comes and tells me they want to run for a seat in the Minnesota legislature, maybe a House seat, a Senate seat, maybe run for the Secretary of State, Attorney General, you name it. Under existing law, my hands are tied. And I am asking you to untie my hands and give me the authority to protect this office and its reputation as being nonpartisan.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Representative Quam, you had a question, and I want to get this, get voted on this and move on from here. So Representative Quam, your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think it's been about a decade I've been on the, Legislative Oversight Committee, LAC, and I honestly can say that all of the things we're looking at and debating now, we did that over several meetings, and it was with great diligence we tried to come up with the best approach, and I think that the language we came through with was agreed upon pretty across the board. So it's a difficult section, but I think it's an important thing. And I just support the, Jim and his difficult situation he finds himself in. And, let's just go on to hearing the amendment and talking on the specifics. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Carlson, you have the A2 amendment. If you want to explain what that does, and then we'll move your amendment and explain what it does.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the A2 amendment deletes lines 10 through 12 on page 2. Again, this is referring to the prohibition of employees of the legislative auditor's office from being a candidate for elected office. So I don't know what more to say beyond the debate that we've already had with regards to this right now, other than I would just offer to Mr. Nobles, we appreciate the story. It seems a little personal in terms of this particular clause, viewing this from an organizational wide standpoint and into the future. I would like to request that the A2 be adopted.
Representative Carlson moves the A2 amendment. Representative Hansen, you're the author of the bill. What is your pleasure on the amendment? And
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I am bringing you the bill as the chair of the Audit Commission, and these were voted on by the Audit Commission. In this particular provision, I voted against the language. It's in the provision when I was in the commission vote.
That members, I don't see any questions right now. So all in favor of the amendment, get the right mouse here. Please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No.
No. The ayes have it. So members, any questions on the remainder of the bill? Discussion. Don't see any hands popping up here. Representative Hansen, do you want to wrap up your final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what is the motion? Is it being laid over or going to the floor or both?
The motion is to refer the bill to the general register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, thank you for the good discussion. I think the bill has a lot of very good cleanup language going to the floor. The Senate will probably have the original language, and hopefully we can work out a compromise in conference. So I would ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Ms. Spreck, if you want to take the roll.
Do you need to renew the motion?
Well, that's right. I'll renew my motion that House File 994, as amended, be referred to the General Register.
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleavorne?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
No.
Representative Mason?
Representative,
what was that?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
No.
Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski, aye.
Representative Quam?
No.
With a vote of 9 ayes and 3 nays, the motion prevails.
Motion prevails. Representative Hansen, you're on your way to the general register.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. I see Representative Cagle is here. The next bill on our agenda is House File 820. Representative Cagle. Representative Mason, do you want to move the division report from the local government committee?
I so move.
Representative Mason moves to adopt the local government division report. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. And I'll move House File. I'll move House File 820 to be referred to the general register. Representative Cagle, you want to explain your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my annual open meetings law bill. So I've been working on open meetings issues for a number of years now. Most recently, last legislative session, we passed a bill that I hope would address some of the pandemic-related issues. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough, which is why 820 is before the committee. House File 820 is a compromise bill that Ms. Gao from the League of Minnesota Cities will discuss in greater detail. We're trying to address the limitations elected officials have who have health concerns facing the length of this pandemic that we're going through right now. Section 1 was amended in local government, and this section addresses whether or not elected officials would need to disclose the location of those who are participating in meetings remotely under the military or medical exemption. Excuse me, when we first passed this law, we didn't realize that we would have to do so. And it doesn't make sense for people to have to disclose what military base they are on or their home address. And so this section fixes it. And the Senate is intending to adopt the same amendment when the Senate companion goes to the floor. And so before I turn it over to my testifier, I just want to point out the joint letter of support and members packets from the League of Minnesota Cities, the Minnesota Association, School Board Association, Minnesota Association of Townships, and Minnesota Association of Counties. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifier, Irene Gao.
Well, I got two testifiers on the list. Is there Matt Elling is the one I have first on my list. Mr. Elling, if you want to identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm actually testifying for HF 1140. This bill
out. I'm looking at the wrong bill. Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Representative Ms. Cow from the League of Minnesota Cities.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Irene Gao, and I'm from the League of Minnesota Cities. I want to thank the committee for hearing this bill and Representative Cagle for authoring it. One of the League's priorities this year is pandemic response. And as true of the state and the legislature, local governments are trying their best to navigate in these uncertain times. HF 820 is consistent with this focus. What we found is that when cities are choosing to hold in-person meetings, which they're allowed to now, as long as the meetings are conducted safely, there are some elected officials who have health-related concerns that preclude them from attending these meetings in person. Sometimes the elected officials themselves or a family member is at higher risk for contracting COVID, and if contracted, falls into a high-risk group for serious complications or hospitalization. The legislature did address this issue, as Representative Cagle had mentioned last session, by passing the medical exception to the open meeting law. But this medical exception can only be used 3 times per calendar year. And because this pandemic has lasted longer than anyone would like, the cap has been reached quickly. And in some cases, an elected official has reached that cap in just a month of scheduled meetings. This results in difficult or impossible choices in how the elected official can serve their community and meet their official duties. Impacted elected officials are left in a strange position of either risking their health by attending meetings in person or being in a remote location that needs to be, according to the law, open and accessible to the public. This has resulted in situations where elected officials have resorted to sitting on the curb of their house when it was still warm enough to do so, or in their car in a public parking lot in order to participate in the meeting. But at the same time, other local governments are holding their meetings completely remotely, and elected leaders do not have to make these difficult choices. This inconsistency is what we're here to ask you to fix. This bill is a fix through a session law specifically addressing the cap between the beginning of this year through July 1st, 2021. It has a retroactive effective date of January 1st, 2021. Essentially, what that means is that there would be no cap between the beginning of this year through July 1st. As long as they meet the other statutory requirements for the medical exception, elected officials would be able to attend meetings from home, allowing them to fulfill their civic responsibilities without worrying about their health. Also, I'll note that we're hoping that the COVID vaccinations will be widely distributed soon, so this time frame of before July 1st accommodates for that distribution. And as Representative Cagle has mentioned, if you don't have the joint letter of support in your packets, I'm happy to send it to you. But there is a support from local government associations, including the Minnesota School Boards Association, the Minnesota Association of Townships, and the Association of Minnesota Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Members, questions? Representative New Brindley, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Representative Cagle for the time limits she put on this. You know, I'll be voting in support of the bill. We as the legislature are working remotely. We should certainly extend that to our local municipalities. I would just point out, however, that I hope we all recognize that working remotely is definitely not an ideal situation. We definitely are not able to dig into bills and issues the same way that we are in person. And so I would just caution that we recognize the downside of this as well. Like I said, I'll be voting in favor, but there are significant downsides to this in governing, and it's definitely not the best way to govern. So thank you for ensuring that there are that there's a time certain on this, Representative.
Thank you, Representative New. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Cagle. I'm a little disappointed. This is state government finance and you didn't seem to manage to make this a controversial bill. So I appreciate working with you in transportation and thank you for this bill.
Representative Kosnick, maybe we can come up with an amendment here on the fly that would do that.
I'd rather not, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions or comments? Looks like you're getting off easy, Representative Cagle. You want to do your wrap up, and then we can get the vote. The vote.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, this is really timely. I think, you know, we all wish that we were out of this pandemic by now, but unfortunately, that's not the circumstances we're in. And so this is just really making sure that, you know, people in local government can participate. And I actually had a timely phone call yesterday with a county commissioner down in Murray County who had some questions. And, you know, there's still some work to be done on this issue to make sure that we can get people to participate in local government. And the last thing we want to do is put people at risk when they're doing that. And so I just want to thank members and hope that you can all support this.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. And with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 820 be referred to the General Register. The Committee Legislative Assistant will take the roll.
Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Bonner.
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski.
No.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Representative Cleborn.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Representative Mason.
Aye.
Representative New Brindley.
Aye.
Representative Pulowski.
Pulowski, aye.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
With a vote of 11 ayes and 1 nay, the motion prevails.
Motion prevails, and the House File 820 is going to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Cagle. The next bill we have, and this is the one I said they're on my paper here, and I was looking at the long line, but House File 1140 with Representative Elkins. And Representative Mason, do you want to move the adoption of the division report?
I move that the division report be adopted.
Representative Mason moves the division report. All in favor of approving the division report, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. Representative Elkins, do you want to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to move that House File 1140 be referred to the General Ledger.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. And Representative Elkins, if you want to describe your bill.
Sure. So, about this time last year was we were going into COVID mode. I noticed that my own local governments were kind of flailing a little bit for how to hold remote meetings under the open meeting law, because a lot of the technology references in the current version of the law are outdated and don't really reflect the way we're all having to work during this pandemic. So as an interim project, I reached out to the Minnesota Council on Government Information, the Minnesota League of Cities, to convene a working group to figure out how to update the open meeting law to reflect the ways, the technologies, and the processes that we're using to conduct our businesses in local and state government during situations such as these. So we have with us today Matt Ealing from the Minnesota Council on Government Information and Irene Gao from the League of Minnesota Cities. I want to thank for doing about 99% of the work on this bill, convening a very broad stakeholder group that included the newspapers, open government advocates, and state and local governments at all levels. So I thought I'd like to introduce Mr. Ealing to describe the process of the bill.
And I have the list of testifiers, and this is the one that Matt Ealing is going to testify. Yes. Mr. Ealing, if you want to identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Matt Ealing, Minnesota Coalition on Government Information. As everyone is aware, the past few months have really seen a marked increase in the use of remote communication technology and remote processes, of course, due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, in terms of government operations, this has provided an opportunity to take a closer look at the various existing remote meeting provisions of Minnesota's open meeting law, and to really look at how they function and how the statute works overall. And we'd like to thank Representative Elkins for encouraging the technical review that resulted in the bill that's before you. So for some background, the open meeting law has been part of Minnesota statutes since the 1950s. Our organization believes it's a very important part of Minnesota's government transparency legacy. Initially, the open meeting law only regulated access by the public to physical locations where various government entities were conducting their meetings. But over time, as technology developed, there were provisions of law that were added in order to facilitate government entity meetings through the use of communications technology in very specifically delineated circumstances. And these remote meeting provisions in the open meeting law include specific criteria that govern when and how state government and local government may conduct so-called remote meetings during the course of their regular business, as well as how all government entities may conduct remote meetings during a pandemic or emergency circumstance. And those circumstances entail a slightly different legal requirement. So the bill before you contains a number of technical modifications to these various existing remote meeting provisions. One of the things that sort of jumped out to our organization as we looked at issues to address was that the existing statute had some readability issues, particularly in regard to how the headers were labeled. We felt that some clarifications were needed there. And so there you'll see in the bill some clarifications to the headers to better to describe what those provisions do. As Representative Elkins has referred to, we have looked through to standardize technology terminology throughout the statute. The statute was amended at various different times and different technological phrases were utilized at those times. So we've tried to standardize that language throughout. And importantly for our organization, there is a provision added to the pandemic and emergency provision of the open meeting law that provides some statutory guidance on how to handle public comment periods when that pandemic or emergency provision is in effect. That's important for the reason that under that pandemic or emergency provision, that's the only provision of the open meeting law where a government entity may be able to physically close the meeting space. And so the question has come up in the last few months, how do you handle public comment periods where a city council or a county board may have a standing public comment period, but the public is not able to actually physically enter the location where the meeting is happening. And in fact, there may be only one person at that meeting site who might not even be a representative. It may be the legal counsel of a city, for instance. So there's guidance provided now in this bill as to how those public comment periods would be handled. And we think that's a major improvement. Other than that, I will stand by for additional questions on the technical aspects of the bill. And again, thanks to Representative Elkins for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Mr. Elling. And the next person on the list is Ms. Cao from the League of Minnesota Cities. Welcome back, and please identify yourself again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Irene Gao, and I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I also want to thank Representative Elkins for his leadership on these issues as related to technology. The stakeholder group was a wide-ranging group, as Representative Elkins has mentioned, and I won't repeat the overview that Mr. Ealing did a really good job of going over. I just want to highlight three things within the bill. As you're going to notice, there is updated terminology, and one of them is the definition of interactive technology. And one of the parts of the conversation that I want to share with you all is, as we were putting this definition in, we wanted to make sure that it allows for the ability, as you can see, consistent with previous definitions, for the ability to hear and see by members of the public. But we also wanted to acknowledge that that doesn't necessarily mean that the person, the member of the public, who may not be able to either hear or see due to a visual impairment or possibly due just to bad internet connectivity. The onus on government entities is to provide the ability to do so, to allow to do so. The second thing I wanted to point out is that there was an update related to the monitoring sections. What you're going to see is deleted language that no longer require or allows government entities to collect costs for participation remotely. And we acknowledge that technology has changed, and there's no longer as much of a need to collect any costs as different technologies have made monitoring easier. And the last thing I wanted to bring up is something Mr. Ealing did talk about, which is the public comment period. And that there was really great, robust discussion around how to do so. And we acknowledge that as government entities, that when there is a ready member comment periods that are offered, that they want to, we want to be able to continue to do so, even in times like now, like the pandemic. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to take any questions as well.
Thank you, Ms. Gao. Members, any questions? Looks like nobody's had all the, enough coffee yet this morning. Well, thank you. Representative Dzikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know who this question is for. Maybe Ms. Gao, the last item that she talked about, subdivision 5 under the bottom of section 6 on the bill, we are writing something related to the pandemic and emergency declaration into regular statute instead of session law. This thing is going to be going away soon. Should we be doing that technically? Maybe that's not a question for Ms. Gao, but maybe staff.
Mr. Elling, I see Mr. Elling put his hand up. Mr. Elling, do you want to touch on that question?
Certainly, and staff can follow up if there's additional detail needed. Representative Dzikowski, the pandemic meeting provision of the open meeting law has been around for several years. I believe it was added post 9/11. So that provision has been in the open meeting law for almost two decades now. It has not been used much until recently. And because of the pandemic, our organization has had a lot of questions from members of the public who've been frustrated that they were trying to participate in what would otherwise be a public comment period during, say, a city council meeting. And they were directed to leave a voicemail or send an email to council members. I know that happened in my city of St. Paul, where I live. So that's the reason why we wanted some additional statutory guidance here. So the pandemic provision, it only takes effect during an emergency or pandemic. There has to be a vote by the members of the government body to bring it into effect. And it can only come into effect under specific criteria. But it has been around for almost two decades in its current form.
Representative Dzikowski, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Elling. A very clear response. I appreciate it. Thank you. The other question I had, Mr. Chair, and I don't know who the question would be for, maybe Ms. Gao, relates to the voting in the journal on section 1 of the bill. Can someone talk through that? Is this related to townships, or is it why wouldn't we just say minutes there just generally? Why shouldn't those votes be put in the minutes all the time?
Ms. Call.
And if she could tell us what the kind of a little bit on the history of the journal and et cetera.
Ms. Call.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Dzikowski, it's a really good question. That section was amended in local government as well. The history of it is that the statutory language before did call it a journal of votes. And recently the Data Practices Office provided an advisory opinion saying that meeting minutes, which actually do include the votes in them, do not qualify as a journal of votes because of the way that the statute is written. And given the fact, so if, for example, if you came to a city or you came to a township and asked for something called the Journal of Votes, and what I gave you were meeting minutes that did include the votes, that would be insufficient. And so Section 1 really addresses that, that meeting minutes would qualify for that as long as the votes were in it.
Representative Dzikowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Gao. I know I've run into this in the past where there have been lawsuits where a township was not willing to turn over what I think, if I remember correctly, was the Journal of Votes. I'm wondering how this impacts this. I'm wondering how this affects citizen access to the information. Can you speak to that, Ms. Gao?
Ms. Gao.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dzikowski, I saw that Mr. Ealing also raised his hand. It shouldn't change the access. The access should be the same. If you're looking for the votes that's taken by any governmental body, And that is included in the minutes. You would be getting the same information.
Mr. Elling, you want to touch on that also?
Yes, just to follow up, that is, Ms. Gao is correct. The language in the bill would modify the open meeting law to make sure that both the journal of votes that's traditionally been required under the open meeting law to be accessible to the public would also include any minutes where votes subject to a meeting of the open meeting law would be tabulated or recorded. So both of those things, the journal and any minutes that record votes, would be subject to public access. That's particularly important in townships because most rural townships are not subject to the Data Practices Act. So the only recourse that citizens in a township have to get those votes is through the open meeting law. So we made sure that all the stakeholders, as we discussed this, we made sure that that was consistent language in the bill.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Elling. Can you talk about that some more, Mr. Elling? I'm still not sure. So this was a rural township, and the citizens wanted access to the votes, and I'm assuming from this language in the discussion here that those votes were in the journal, and they had to go to court to try to get it. And it looks like this language might actually improve that for the citizen, but I'm wondering if this is left the way it is, or what the current law says now, if indeed the citizens have to go to court in order to compel a township to turn that over if they won't.
Mr. Elling.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Drazkowski, overall, and I don't know the specific details of the incident you're referring to, but our organization has heard a number of times that there have been problems trying to access records through townships. There has been litigation around that recently. So in the event that a township will not produce the journal that it's required to under the open meeting law, then there is recourse to go to court under the litigation provisions of the open meeting law. Our hope by including the minutes language in this bill is that it makes it clear that if votes are recorded in either in minutes or in the journal, that there's a legal obligation for the township or the city or whoever it is subject to the open meeting law to turn those over. We would hope that wouldn't require litigation, but there is a litigation provision in the open meeting law if that's necessary.
Representative Skowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Elling. I'm just hopeful through this process, since all the folks involved in this bill are looking at this, if we can somehow address that, or maybe the thinking can be expanded around that, because this people are expending resources in order to get public information because of the fact that it's in the journal. If that's the case, we need to do something so that citizens can have access to the votes of the body. I mean, that's fundamental access to information that they should have. Thank you, Mr. Elling, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, any more questions, comments? If not, Representative Elkins, you want to wrap up and then renew your motion?
Yes, I think everything has been very well covered today, so I'll keep this simple and renew my motion that we advance House File 1140 to the General Register.
Representative Elkins renews his motion to refer House File 1140 to the General Register. Ms. Spreck, if you want to take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleborne?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
Aye.
Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski, aye.
Representative Kwan?
See.
With a vote of 13 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails. 12 ayes.
The motion prevails. The bill 1140 is onto the General Register. Thank you, Representative Elkins.
Thank you.
The last bill on our agenda today is probably the most controversial one we have. It is House File 738. Representative Haley, welcome to the committee. And Representative Mason, do you want to move the vision report?
I do. I move the local government division report on House File 738 be approved.
Representative Mason moves adoption of the local government division report. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Guys have it. I'll move to refer House File 738 to the General Register. Representative Haley, you want to describe your bill, and then we'll get to your testifiers.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Thanks for having us. I would say maybe my bill is going to be the most exciting of your morning, Chair Nelson. House File 738 is a very simple bill, just allowing a city that I represent, Lake City, Minnesota, the birthplace of water skiing, if you didn't know, allowing them to establish a port authority. And I will turn it over to my testifiers to talk in more detail, and then I'm certainly open for questions once we allow them to speak, if that's okay with you, Chair Nelson.
That's fine. I got a list of testifiers here. The first person on the list is Tom Dwelly. I hope I said that right. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Nelson and committee members. My name is Tom Dwelly. I'm a chair of our Lake City EDA board, and I'm a sixth generation Lake Cityan, so we've been in Lake City for many, many years. We are before you today to get authorization to form a port authority. Lake City, if you aren't aware, is right on the south shore of Lake Pepin, so we're the south shore of Minnesota. And we have a great tourism business. We have agricultural businesses in our community. We have a flour mill and railroad connection for them. And we are looking at we have a federal pier that goes out 700 feet into our lake that is in need of some maintenance. And we're not sure whose responsibility that will be. But we have found and been looking at becoming a port authority for a number of years, and we've watched our neighbors to the north, Red Wing and Hastings and St. Paul, and our neighbors to the south in Wabasha and Winona develop their waterfronts and take advantage of the resources that a port authority has that a local EDA doesn't have. And so we are very anxious to put some more tools in our toolbox, and hopefully in the future, as opportunities present themselves, be able to tap into some of the resources at a federal level. We have thoughts of a ferry going across back and forth to Wisconsin, to the communities over there in the summertime. Right now we have a land bridge because the lake froze solid enough they're driving across. But, both bridges are 20 miles to the north and, 15 miles to the south. So, we're just looking for opportunities to help improve our waterfront and additional resources.
Thank you, Mr. Dwelly. The next person I have on the list is Mr. Mark Fayette. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I'm struggling to find my button to turn my video on, so maybe I'll just jump right into testimony. You'll have to imagine if I can turn this button on once I get a little further on, I'll do that. So
we can hear you fine. So that's go ahead.
You can hear me fine. All right. Very good. Sound check. So thank you for the opportunity. My name is Mark Fayette, here today representing Lake City EDA. Thanks for the opportunity to testify before you and to respectfully request your approval to establish a port authority in Lake City. Thank you also, Rep. Haley, for supporting this bill. I'll be brief in my testimony. I think Tom did a very good job of covering the basics of our community. But for my part, I've been honored to serve in with the EDA for at least the last 10 years. I can assure you there's been a lot of work accomplished since the EDA's formation in about the mid-1980s, but there's still a lot we can do. One of the more recent accomplishments is that we invested a great deal of time and energy and resources in the development of a really comprehensive waterfront downtown master plan. That plan now serves as a tool that we use to further study and reveal what Lake City could be by identifying the needs and utilizing our physical resources, some of which really are untapped or underutilized. you know, this unique character of the community has in many ways almost always been influenced by the lake. As we look back in time, we, you know, the river's been a conduit for trade and commerce, but looking forward, we see the great potential in our master plan and now recognize the need for additional tools, some mechanisms and funding sources to expand the economic base. So in summary, as a port authority, we see the opportunity to make our community more open to interstate commerce and provide us better access to federal programs and agencies. And as well with the ability to work with other port authorities in Minnesota, we feel that's a very important piece of this. Finally, I guess the port can act as a bit of an aggregator of a number of unique support systems for communities like ours, where we have complicated enterprises. Many economic support systems for cities are EDAs, but a port authority is often the most favorable when multiple stakeholders are involved. So I guess to wrap up, I think we've done a lot to grow our community, but I see we have a lot more to do. And I hope you agree and approve our becoming a port authority in Lake City. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Rep. Haley, members of the committee. I'm happy to answer questions or we are regarding anything that you might ask. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fayette. And then the next person I have is Mayor Mark Nichols.
Yes.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you for this opportunity, and thank you, members and staff. I'm Mark Nichols, the mayor of the wonderful city of Lake City. I think my compatriots have outlined pretty well our objectives here, so I really just want to say thank you. I know how hard you all work. I want to thank Rep. Haley for her hard work in our area. I hope you can come down to our area. It's a beautiful, the lake's 25 miles long, 3 miles wide approximately. It's interesting, it's complicated. One of our objectives to do this is that if our shorefront's approximately 8 miles of shoreline, and we have in that 8 miles a federal 700 foot pier. We have state property that's actually parkland. We have county land. It's a complicated little community, and being able to aggregate our staff to address these issues is going to be a big win for our community. So again, thank you, sir, and we're available for questions.
Any questions from the members? Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just looking at the statutes. I'm not perfectly aware of all of the details of the Port Authority, but I was looking at 469.053, mandatory city levy. So is this how it says, a city shall, at the request of the Port Authority, levy a tax in any year for the benefit of the Port Authority. So can maybe staff tell us how that relationship works between the Port Authority and the city? It sounds like the tail wags a dog there.
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, I'll defer to Chelsea Griffin, who's our local government analyst in this area.
Ms. Griffin, identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, and members. For the record, my name is Chelsea Griffin, and I'm with House Research. Looking at the language, it looks like the Port Authority would, make the request for that tax levy. To be honest, I'm relatively new to this area of the law, so I'd be happy to look into it further and get back to you.
Thank you, Ms. Griffin. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll look at this more offline, but I'm kind of mixed about this bill. We're creating another opportunity for more taxes for the residents. Our cities and counties and state government in Minnesota, we know we are very high tax. The city of Lake City has a pretty high tax structure, and so I'm just kind of weighing the bill, but I appreciate the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Any other members? If not, I know Mr. Dwelly talked about a ferry. I hope if we have a ferry between here and Wisconsin that we charge the Wisconsinites a higher fee than we charge a Minnesota residents. With that, members, I'll renew my motion that House File 738 be referred to the General Register. Ms. Sprepp, can you take the roll?
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Nash, or Representative Drazkowski?
No.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleborne?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative Newt Brindley?
Aye.
Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski, aye.
Representative Quam?
Aye.
With a vote of 11 ayes and one nay, the motion prevails.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Haley, your bill's on the way to the General Register.
Thank you, Chair Nelson and committee members.
Thank you. Members, just a note before we go to adjournment, on Monday, next Tuesday, we have a full agenda. We have Representative Marquardt's House File 1019. We also have Representative Olson's House File 7. And we also have scheduled to come back at 6 o'clock tomorrow or Tuesday night to finish up with House File 1200. So members, with that, I hope you have a good weekend. We are adjourned.